Welcome to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
We're going to talk with newsmakers and rule breakers and ground shakers and risk takers and see if we can't just find out really what's going on in the world in conversation that's not just about victory or who's right, but actual progress. If you're looking for a little inspiration instead of desperation, you found it.
This is Life Matters.
Welcome back to Life Matters, another edition with I think is the best radio show on the planet, but I'm obviously very biased. John St. Augustine, glad to be with you again. This is April, and even this show repeats itself at some point. It's very important to me because April, among other things, is Organ Donation Awareness Month, and that is something very near and dear to my heart. It'll be 14 years this July that I donated a kidney to my daughter, Amanda Lee, and she's doing fantastic. And it's like a lot of things in our lives. We have problems that we think are somebody else's problem until they become our problem. And then we're like, how come somebody's not doing something about this? Then we got to do something about it. So ever since my daughter was born with a kidney defect in 1988, I've become a nephrologist in many ways and had to learn these things and figure this stuff out. So I have this public forum to a greater or lesser degree, and I want to use it for something that reminds people that organ donation is really important. The amount of people's lives that are saved and all that kind of stuff, you can find all that on the internet. But again, until it becomes our problem, it's usually somebody else's problem. And kidney failure especially, and kidney problems, it can happen at any time. I know more people that were perfectly healthy and something goes south, and then, hey, I'm not on regular radio, I can say it, they're up shit creek. So we need to do something about that, and that's what this conversation today is all about. I have a couple of great friends going to be joining me. First off, for those of you who don't know this already, there was a time I was actually in shape. Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe. But I used to play football. I played midget, high school, college, and semi-pro football and played with some great people. And a guy that I had a couple years with on the field was named Stan Scott. First of all, excellent athlete, great football player, the best crew cut you could ever see on a human being this guy had. And unfortunately, he passed away in a tragic accident when he was a young man. And his wife, Kathleen, and I have stayed in touch over the years. If you caught me a couple years ago on WGN, you heard us talking about what she created out of this called Stan's Law. And I know Kathleen's a little bit of time crunch. I wanted to get it right in, and we're going to bring Connie Payton in as well in short order here. But Kathleen joins me just outside of Chicago. Kathleen, good to have you.
Hi, John. Good to be here.
Oh, come on. Don't give me the pat. Oh, hi, John. Come on. Bring it.
I'm actually grateful that you give me another opportunity to share my story and make people aware and hopefully just to bring more awareness, more people signing up. I believe Illinois has the largest organ donor database in the country, and it's still not enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Can you real quick kind of just encapsulate what happened? You know, Stan and I played side by side for a couple of years. I'm right about the crew cut, right? The flat top?
Oh, yeah.
Freaking outstanding. What happened?
Stan was in an accident on the job, and he suffered severe head trauma in 2003. He was 35 years old, in amazing physical health, even for a retired football player. And unfortunately, Stan's head trauma was extremely severe. It was 3 fractures in his skull, and they tried everything. He was airlifted to Loyola University, and they did an amazing job with him. They tried. They did every type of shunt and surgery they could. And within 6 days, we had come to the realization that this was not meant to be. And I had spoken several times with the Gift of Hope. They're the organ donation organization here in Illinois that handles procurement and transplant aid and things like that. So they are the go-to people for this type of thing. And they explained the difference to me between a heart-beating donation when someone is legally brain dead and a non-heart-beating donation, which takes place within a very short time frame after the body is physically dead, has passed. And at that time, they can still use all of the organs except for the heart and lungs. So it's still a viable transplant opportunity and can still save a lot of people. So as we drew to the close of my husband's life, my children asked, you know, is Daddy going to be okay? And they were 3 and 7 at the time, and I had to be honest with them, and I said, no. I said, Daddy's going to go up to heaven, but daddy's organs are going to help other people, other moms and dads and boys and girls are going to live because of your dad's thoughtfulness and his planning and his desire to be an organ donor.
Right.
And then we were all in the room when my husband passed, and I was trying to get people out of the way because I knew that the Harvest team has a very limited window to get in there and make his legacy count. And nobody seemed to be hurrying at the nurse's station. And I was like, well, where's the Harvest team? Aren't they going to move him into the OR? What's going on? And they said, oh, no, we don't do non-heartbeating transplants here.
Whoa.
And, you know, clearly at that point, there's no time to move him, to save any of his organs. And I was heartbroken. I think that was almost nearly, took a really bad situation and made it so much worse.
And what was the reasoning for that? Why weren't they able to do that?
Well, at the time, some hospitals, Loyola being one of them, they just didn't have a policy for it. And that's their right. They don't have to do it, and they're perfectly within their rights not to. However, without being informed of that, I was robbed of my right to have my husband's organs used for donation. If someone would have told me, and I didn't know this either, but he could have been transferred by ambulance to anyone, like Lutheran General does them, any nearby trauma center that handles transplants. Mm. And then he would have saved all those people, you know? And so that I sat on that for a few months, and within 6 months of his passing in the fall of 2003, I started reaching out and doing some research on my own and finding out the who and the why, and contacted my state rep and told him my story and said, there needs to be a law. People need to be aware of their options.
Mm-hmm.
We all support organ donation, but it should be a much simpler route,
right,
you know?
Right.
And unfortunately, State Representative Michael McAuliffe and State Senator James DeLeo, and then at the time, the State Senator Barack Obama signed on as chief sponsors.
Really?
My kids and I, it was House Bill 4862, and my kids and I flew down to Springfield twice. We testified before the state representatives, and then we testified before the state Senate. And then by August of 2004, it was on the governor's desk. It was unanimously voted in.
Governor, I'm not Elvis Rod Blagojevich. That
yes,
governor? Yes.
Governor Blagojevich.
Yes.
You know, he was very supportive.
Yeah.
And
No, wait. I'm saying he is Elvis, not that he doesn't think he's not Elvis. Wasn't that the deal? He colored his hair to look like Elvis.
Yes.
Not coloring it in prison. But at least he got this done, so that's a good thing. So all these years later, you look back on this. And devastating that nobody should have to go through what you went through the first time, but it's part of life, as you said. And then the second part is not being able to fulfill Stan's wishes. But in the end, maybe in some weird way, without being too karmic about it, that even that served a purpose to save more lives even than Stan would have that year.
Exactly. I agree. The end result is the Stan Scott Law. And what that does, it's very simple, but so impactful. It just provides that there's a form, among the many forms you see when your loved one is in the hospital, it's a form that informs you of your rights. And it'll clearly spell out that the hospital that your loved one is in does or doesn't do this or that type of organ donation, and that you have the right to request that your loved one be transferred to a facility that does those type of donations, so that you can make an informed decision. Just like any other medical form, you need to be informed. And not having that information, you know, it was impactful on my life in an adverse way. But by knowing it, and like you said, moving forward and making this change, hopefully no one else will ever have to go through that again.
Yeah. So Stan's Law, when someone's in a situation with a hospital that has this obviously in place, it's the hospital's duty to inform the families don't have to go looking for Stan's Law. It's already in place, and that's done.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Actually, it's the gift of hope that sends representatives into the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that really have all the information, and they're the ones that you would sign a consent with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually the gift of hope representatives, and they're in every hospital all day long, every day. So it's, and they're called in the minute something is of that level, and they're on standby. And it is an amazing group. It's an amazing foundation. So I'm grateful for all they do. And I don't feel that this was anyone's fault. It was just a glitch in the system.
Yeah.
And Stan's death shined a light on it.
Well, let me tell you this. Can I use
fix it?
I use a football metaphor. First of all, you're toughy, so that's without question. I don't expect anything less out of you. I've been at a couple bars with you, so I know. But that's a long time ago. We're not going to get into all that. The second thing is, you know, there are certain people in your life, in my life, that I've come across that they are as big after they have passed as they were when they were here. And I played next to your husband, and we chewed a lot of the same dirt. And none of this surprises me about how, even though he's gone, and I wish for your family and your kids that he was here. This is how big he played then. None of this surprises me. And the last question, what's the big aha in this for you, besides there was a glitch in the system and you had a chance to fill that and all that? What's the big aha in the last 13 years?
You know, honestly, I'd say it's two-part. One is that it's dealing with grief, and you are so much stronger than you think. If someone said to me the year before he passed that was going to happen, I would have said, oh, my God, I'm going to fall apart. I'm going to just crumble into dirt. Nothing's going to be right. And then when you're put to the test and you realize that there's so much more in you and you have faith and, you know, you have family and friends and you get through it. And then I guess the other part is it's a little wistful. It's my kids growing up without their dad. I would say that's the sad part, that they didn't really get to know him. My son was 3, my daughter was 7. I feel sad about that, but I know they will get to know him. And they've seen the impact that he's made, almost every day in our lives.
Well, if you want me to call Suzanne or Zach and tell them about stories at Bell Liquor, I'm happy to fill in the blanks, my friend.
You know, Suzanne turns 21 next year.
Hey.
I think that's
that'd be a good that'd be a good time to kind of break it in. You know, your dad and I kind of go in this corner over here. Oh, never mind. Listen, I know you got to bug out. I just want to thank you on a couple levels. Number one is I have watched your trajectory for at least the last 5 or 6 years, you know, you're a formidable woman doing some amazing things in the world, number one. And number two, I know that it'd be easier to have Stan with you, but he picked the right woman to carry on. And number three, being in that gap for your kids, which is never easy. Mm-hmm. So what and now what, huh?
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Before I leave, I have to say, my son is a huge fan of your whole family, Connie.
Oh, thank you
so much. Wait,
the
whole family? Even Jarrett? Yes. Don't tell him that.
Yeah. We actually saw him at a slaughter game a while back.
When Jarrett played?
I think that's when he was on the sidelines. I think he was one of the owner's managers at the time, yes. And we just watched the show on your late husband, on Walter, the Football Wife. Documentary.
Yes.
And we just sat there in awe and tearing up and watching it and watching how strong you are, and you're amazing.
Well, you are too, just listening to your story, and thanks for sharing, because you really have opened my eyes to some information that I didn't know. So, you know, we never know why things happen, but you know, I think you and your family too has made a big role and will make a difference in so many people's lives, because I believe we're blessed to be a blessing, and we never know how we're going to be that blessing. I mean, you know, and I strive to do that every day, and even in small ways, but what you did was great. So thank you for being a champion for your husband and making a difference in so many people's lives.
Thank you so much. Well, have a great show, guys.
All right, Kathy, thanks much.
Bye-bye.
Life Matters continues right after this.
You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
Back at it on Life Matters. You can find this show and a few of the other shows on CBS at play.it. It's the digital platform. Once again, I think it's nothing more really than a playground for a bunch of people who just can't shut up for a living. Glad to have you with me one more time. They're all special shows to me. This is show number episode 27. If you're not counting, you should be, because it'll probably be a test at some point. But you can look back at all the shows that are everything from, I mean, I've been doing this for 6 months and as this little experiment. So spending time with some of the most bright and best humans I can get my hands on around here, all with a message and all with something to remind us about that the life matters, that we have it. And we're the ones that get to decide what matters and what doesn't. And April being Organ Donation Awareness Month, I started the show talking about, you know, my daughter being born with a very common kidney defect that did not rectify itself. And at 5 years old, they took her right kidney out right in Chicago at Children's Memorial. They did the best they could with what they had. We limped along for 8 more years, and beyond all odds, I was the one. Both my father and grandfather had polycystic kidney disease, and it was part of the reason they died young. I didn't have it. That's in my book, Every Moment Matters, 1695. Go to my website. You can find it there. But there was a guy who is in my first book called Living an Uncommon Life, Essential Lessons from 21 Extraordinary People. And some of the people I had a chance to work with and spend time with over the years, John Denver, Wayne Dyer, who are both gone, which is beyond my comprehension, Dorothy Hamill, a bunch of other people that are in there, Cheryl Richardson, was Walter Payton. And there's a section on there in Walter. I got a chance to work with him after he retired. And I remember, I think it was in 93, somewhere around the suburbs of Chicago, we did this. He was always playing golf. So it was, everything was connected to a golf tournament. But it was like this Chicago version of the Hall of Fame. They turned the atrium of the hotel into a 50-yard line, and there was all these tables. And I emceed the first half of the event. And there's some memories I have from that were just ridiculous. Like Burt Reynolds showed up. And his hair, he would show up, then the hair showed up after he showed up. And you remember this?
Yes.
You remember the Burt Reynolds thing?
Yes.
Yeah. So the governor at the time was a good-looking guy. I can't remember his name. Glasses, gray hair. I don't remember who he was. He was there. These Hollywood types.
With the B. What was his name?
Was it a B?
What's his name?
I'll find it out. I'll bring it in later. Oh, that's terrible, huh?
I know.
We don't know the governor of Illinois. Because Blagojevich is taking the spot.
Not that B. Not.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We should know his name.
Yes, because he's not in jail.
I know.
He's got head glasses, really good gray hair.
Yes.
That's terrible.
I know.
I'll find it. So I had a chance to work with Walter on some different projects and all that kind of stuff. It was a great thing. You're still thinking about who the governor is, aren't you? I can see your mind working a million miles an hour. So anyway, I moved to Michigan, and I was coming back after, it was probably in 1998, somewhere in there, 97, 98. And at the time, the Payton offices were off, like, Martingale Road,
yes,
off
Martingale
of 53, right?
Yes.
And I was going to go over and see him, and I thought, I'm busy. I'll stop next time in, and there was no next time in for me. Mm-hmm. So the chapter in Living an Uncommon Life is called Tomorrow's Promise to No One. And I remember there was a little plaque in his office that said, all change, no matter how small, requires courage.
Yes.
You remember this little plaque by the desk?
I gave it to him.
You did not?
Mm-hmm. Somebody gave it to me, and I thought it was perfect. It's talking about, change is never easy, and it requires courage.
You gave him that?
Yeah, I gave
him.
Yeah,
man, the hair in my arms just went up.
Mm-hmm.
So all these years later, of course, 1999, and he was only 45, and all that went around that. But the thing that was amazing to me is when the world found out that number 34 was ill and maybe needed a transplant, thousands of Payton fans, yes, all over the world, Connie, said, I'd be willing to give a part of my body. Were you surprised by that?
I was, because as you say, we never know what life is going to bring our way. And when Walter got ill, first of all, that was a surprise, because he was our Superman. You know, he didn't get sick. And so it was really surprising. I think it surprised him too, just how well thought of he was and how much people really loved him. Because I think somewhere along the way, you kind of lose sight of that, you know. But it was a big deal, because all of the cards and all of the well wishes and all of the people who were willing to give him, be a living donor and give him part of their liver, was incredible.
And I think part, you know, I'm guessing what came out of that was so much of the work the foundation does now saw that there was this huge need. And unfortunately, because of other health complications, he couldn't have the transplant.
Right.
And my first thought, and I think he said it, or you said it, or Jared said, somebody said it, if you're willing to help me, are you willing to help everybody else? And
yes,
that's where this comes from, huh?
Yes, it does. And it is, you know, it's amazing, because, you know, we never thought about it. And before Walter got ill and was placed on a transplant list, none of us were organ donors. None of us thought about it. You know, it happens to everybody else, and it doesn't happen to you.
Well, I started the show saying,
yeah,
it's always somebody else's problem.
Always somebody else's problem. And then we realized just what a big problem it was. And we're, you know, and really, you just never know why things happen, but there's always a big reason behind it. But it's definitely something that's near and dear to our hearts now, and given the chance, and thank you for having me here today, you know, to just let people know it really is something, it's an easy fix. It's something easy to do, you know, and some of us walk around wondering what our plight in life and, you know, and it feel like they have nothing to give back. Well, this is an easy way to make a difference.
I like when you get all worked up about stuff because I can tell it's serious for you. You yes. live through it like Kathleen did. You yes. see what happens when, and, yeah. and there's a lot of reasons that, like, I wanted you both in the same zip code today, mm-hmm. for lack mm-hmm. of a better term, even though on a football level, no one really knew Stan Sout except the semi-pro Chicago Panther teams and all the rest. Everybody knew Walter. There's a lot of the same mentality that goes into living with a football player and being around all that. And then both of you have carried on after both are gone. I found that all fascinating to me.
Yeah. You never know what's going to happen. And I mean, mm-hmm. really, I had this nice little quiet life. And I really enjoyed kind of being in the background and being mom, room mom, and doing things for kids. But, you know, being thrust in the spotlight really has, it's not something I wanted to do, but it does give me a platform to really speak out on issues that's important in life. So.
I think the last time we were together, we were doing the Dr. Oz show, and we were talking about, that's a long time ago.
It's like yes.
6 years, maybe. And I remember all three of you, the kids were with yeah. you, talking about organ donation and bringing awareness to that. Have you seen in the last 6 years changes, more information, people getting more involved? Do you keep an eye on that at all?
You know, I do, and I think people are really more comfortable about it now, and especially in you know, African American community, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it was kind of taboo. It's not, you know, and even though there are more of us that need, you know, organ and tissue, you know, mm-hmm. need those donations, and but many of us were really afraid of it.
Why
know,
do you think that is? It's a religious thing. It's a
I don't
spiritual
think it was.
Thing. It's a lack of information.
Lack of information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lack of information. That's it. Because once you realize that, you know what, it's. It's an easy fix. I mean, and it's not the doctors that's going to harvest, you know, the organs, and they will do everything to save your life if something yeah. happens. You know, because that's what they're in, a life saving business. You know,
right.
not to take your life, but to save it.
Right, right.
But God forbid something like that happen. You know, you can make a difference and save so many other people's lives.
As I talked about in that chapter, about that was the big aha for me. As you said, he was Superman. I remember when Jarrett was 10, 12. We all went to the World Wrestling event at the Chicago Stadium. Not
oh,
stadium.
My goodness.
Yes. And I kind of set the deal up, and Razor Ramon, if any wrestling fans mm-hmm. remember Razor Ramon, hey, Tuco. Yeah, and we did some promos at the office, and then we went to the event. I'll never forget it. It was one of those rare moments where it's blazed in my mind. And before the event, Walter's wearing a 34 jersey. We cut his sleeves and tied him up under his arms. He flipped up against the wall, gave me his wallet, keys, and watch, which I should have left with the car. But I held his ankles, and he was doing upside-down push-ups, and he was not supposed to go in the ring. He's supposed to just be the manager. That's not going to happen. So there's 20,000 people chanting his name. It lasted about 8 minutes. He jumps in the ring, jumps on the guy's back. You know, come on. And there's Jarrett in the ring, and I'm thinking, this... Just don't hurt him. Nobody get hurt here. We don't have any lawsuits. It's all good. That part was fun. But you know what was most important to me? Mm-hmm. Afterwards. You probably don't know this. So we get all cleaned up and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And there's these giant wrestlers all lined up for his autograph. You know? And they're all like little kids. So you're used to that part. But then we walked around the entire upper deck. And he had to stick his head in every skybox. And have to go into every skybox and had to sign autographs in every skybox. This took an hour. The best part of it, we get all the way to the end, which is the kitchen. He's going to cut through. We got a security guy, we're cutting through. And all the chefs are like, hey, Walter, we sit down and we eat dinner with the chefs.
Really?
Just like six of us. And I watched him treat them the way he treated the 20,000. Mm-hmm. And that's what's always stuck with me, whether it was, you know, he would sit in the garage in his car and call, knowing there was a meeting upstairs, and say, I'm downstairs, I'll be up when I feel like it, or you know, all that kind of stuff. But he was such a kid so many times, and that energy, I think, is what transferred to so many people. It's what we miss the most.
I think so too. No, he really was. He was a good guy, and mm-hmm. he was strange. My mother always thought he was the strangest. You know, she goes, he doesn't talk much, and he doesn't want to be around people, and I don't know why you like him. But those are the things you get to love about him,
too. I was going to say, what did you see? Because some of the pictures of you two when you were young was like, hey, what's going on here?
Oh, goodness. It definitely wasn't love at first sight, that's for sure. No, it was not.
Was it a Soul Train thing? Was that part of the deal?
You know what? I didn't know him then. I didn't know him then. No, his for whatever reason, like I said, Bob Hill just thought I was the best thing for Walter. And, well, you know what? Now that, I guess. I was.
Go ahead.
He knew what he was doing. Yep. But no, it wasn't love at first sight. But no, but we, you know, 24 years later of marriage, well, you know, the good and bad of it all.
Yep.
You know, you gotta love the guy, and he was a good guy, and he really was. You know, sometimes, you know, people, you know, he could be so quiet, and he would come home and go down in our basement, and it was dark, and, you know, and you would see those sides of him and thought, God, you know what, he's just down in the dungeon all by himself, nobody. But when he came out of it and into the light, you know,
nobody better. Listen, and we're going to break here in a second, but doing the whole Walter Payton, this is your life reminiscing thing. It's hard for me not to because I haven't seen you for a while. The memory I have that is most vivid to me and most emotional to me, my son Andy was 3 or 4 at the time, and sometimes I'd take him with me to the office there. And I was working on side project, posters, things like that. And we had a meeting with somebody local to do something, and I'm like, well, what am I going to, my kid's 3 or 4. Well, I was like, he'd come with me. I'll come in the meeting when you guys are done. All right. So off they go down the hall. And they disappear. So maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes later, I come walking out, and there's nobody here. Where's my son? He's with Peyton. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. So I finally find him. I looked in his office twice. He's not in there. Uh-huh. And then I looked on the floor, and they're playing bowling on the floor. Uh-huh. And he had taken, he had this thing on the wall. It was like golf tees, all kind of logo golf tees, balls or something, I don't remember. And they lined the golf tees up like bowling pins on the floor under the desk. So here's my 3-year-old with Peyton, with Walter, bowling. I'm like, we're ready for you anytime now. And my son never forgot that, and the hard candy Starlight mints that were just everywhere in every room.
Oh, my goodness.
He was addicted to those things.
Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, in that Mud Hank house, I had this big Asian vase that were set on the landing there before you would go down to the lower part of that. When he passed, and I got ready to move, so that... And when they got ready to pack that thing up, do you know that big vase that
Please
had to
no.
be as most as tall was full of between
Starlight
Mint wrappers and banana taffies?
Yeah.
Wrappers.
Ridiculous.
So I'm like, he ate, but, well, we were in the house quite a long time.
That's
but,
where he was putting the wrappers?
Yeah, that's where we were putting the wrappers.
In the vase.
God, like, you had to laugh. Only Walter.
I know. And, you know, like I said, here's my son's now 25, and he'll still say, Dad, hard candy. And that's, we both know what it means. Connie Payton's in the studio with me on Life Matters, talking about things that really, really matter. April is Organ Donation Awareness Month. More about what the Connie and Walter Payton Foundation are doing and this run that you got coming up, and something else is near and dear to me, the veterans.
Yes.
Back with more after this.
You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
And we're back on Life Matters, CBS Play.it, digital, all kind of different radio these days. When I started in radio back in 19 last century, it was a far different deal. So now people in the palm of their hand can listen to this show anywhere in the world. It's amazing to me. I get an email from Australia, and people say, oh, I love this show you did about this or that, but you say shit too much. I'm like, well, really? It's my show. I can say shit all I want. Anyway, Governor, you know, that's the way it is. You know, if you get a certain point in your life, Connie, who gives a shit, right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. We're at that age. I know I'm a lot older than you.
No,
so
you're
no.
not that much older.
I think so.
All right. Well, if that's what you want us to go with, we'll go with that. Anyway, we just figured out that it's Governor Jim Edgar was the guy with the good hair.
Yes.
And the glasses. And he was a good guy. He's not in prison. Which is unusual for an Illinois governor.
Oh, my goodness. Let's not even get started on these politicians around here.
I'm telling you. Every now and again, I'll be out driving around, and I see the 34 license plate, and it says organ donor on there. How did that happen?
Well, you know, Walter actually, right when he realized he needed an organ, and he met with, you know, Secretary of State and decided he wanted to become an advocate.
Let's just stop for a second. Man's dying.
Yes.
Knows he's dying.
Yes.
Needs a transplant.
Yes.
Goes to the Secretary of State, says, I want to do something about it.
Yes. And he did. He did a commercial. And it started from there. And then after he passed, they came up with the idea. It was a nice way to, you know, have people be aware of it and not forget. So, and I have the best license plate of all. I 34? Got 34.
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. All these little things, these, you were saying while we're in break, and if you don't mind sharing that, it's almost like he left all these little puzzle pieces for you, Jarrett, and Brittany to find.
Yes.
Knowing he wasn't going to be here.
I know. You know, again, we look at these things like the wrappers in the vase, and even in the kids' room, you know, when he was sick at home, and he spent time in each of their rooms, and they both were really mad because they were like, well, why is he running us out of our room? He has his own bedroom. And even those little things, we didn't even know, you know, we didn't know how close it was getting, but just so many little things that my kid, we look back and thought, it's almost like he must have known. We don't know if he did, but they were really heartwarming to us and made us smile and made us laugh in the way that Walter could do it. So, yeah, very meaningful things.
I was talking to a guy on last week's show named Radhanath Swami. Born in Skokie as a Richard Slavin, then became a Swami in India. Feeds 1.2 million kids a day.
Wow.
Yeah, slacker, not doing anything with his life. But we were talking about things, and he has dealt with, obviously, the dying and all the illness in India. Mm-hmm. And he said his experience is people who know, there's a knowing that comes about when you're getting ready to leave. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like insights that you would never have before. And you do things like go in your kids' bedrooms and leave them things. And
exactly.
It's like a merging of things. So great stuff. Let's see, 2-3 years ago, now I find out you're working with veterans. And it was, you know, as a veteran myself, I was just not surprised, very touched. Went over with you guys and saw the facility and just how did that, this novel idea to do something for homeless veterans come about? Because I know you have nothing else to do.
Well, you know, Kelly Woods, the young lady that helps me run the foundation, her father.
Did you say young lady?
Yes.
Okay, well,
yes,
she'll
lady.
Be happy now.
Her father is. I mean, that's his plight. And every summer in July, he has this huge dinner in Kendall County for veterans, mm-hmm. and he also sets up the honor flight for these veterans to go on. Every he's been doing that, and so Kelly asked one year if I would be the speaker, and I'm like, what do I have to say to these wonderful people? That
yeah.
you know, really, they've
right.
given so much. I haven't given anything. What am I going to say to them? But anyway, I did. I spoke, and then I went back every year after that to serve dinner because they look for volunteers. And just in talking to some of them, they would ask these questions, you know, do you realize how many veterans are homeless and, you know, how many of us need help and some of us that are just a check away from being homeless and things that just broke your heart. And you're like, really? You know, you hear these wonderful men have gone and given up, you know, their lives, to protect our freedoms, and they come back and they're almost on the street. A lot of them are on the street. And then Kelly and I came up with this idea. Why don't we do something? Why don't we find a place and start this shelter for homeless vets? And I'm like, okay, so what are we going to do? But we were thankful because we had another friend, and we were trying to decide, how could we work together? He was in home health care. Let's do something together. Well, I knew I wasn't going to go into home health care business. So he had a facility that he wanted me to come and meet the people there just to see what kind of work he did and that he was a man of his word. And it happened to be the old Concord Hotel.
And right outside of Chicago.
Right outside of Chicago, North Lake, right. And then they had a top floor that was empty, just sitting there, and they didn't know what to do with it. And Kelly and I did come up with the idea, well, what if we can raise some money, come up with some money, and
listen,
have
I would
these
love to see you
done.
Two sitting there brainstorming
oh,
this.
Oh, my goodness.
Have been something
yeah,
to see.
You know what? And we pull stuff out of our...
Oh, sure.
From everywhere. I didn't know where the money was going to come from, but we knew there were a lot of good people who probably would care the way we cared and would want to donate, and they did. And they came to our aid. So that was the idea. That just like that, it all came together. And we talked to the owner of the building. He was willing to put the work into refinishing the top floor. All we had to do was raise the money to, you know, get the furniture in the rooms and get the vets. And it was easy.
It was easy.
It was easy.
No brainer. So how did it come together? Because I know there was a sponsor. Are you still doing this?
Yes. We put out calls and flyers and emails and all kinds of stuff, and like asking people if they would want to donate a room for homeless veterans. So what they did, if they donated $2,500, which for a lot of people it's nothing, it would get them their bed, all of their bedding, a TV, because we worked with Abbey Electronics, mm-hmm. and they donated the TVs for hardly anything. And the furniture, the veterans would just have to move in the room. And so many people, 25, you sure that's it? Like that.
Yeah.
People donated the money, and they got a nice little plaque on the door with their family's name
that.
On it.
Yeah, yeah. And well, when you get off the elevator, that whole, just the wall, the mural there, put chills on my back.
Isn't it awesome? We
really
had someone, an artist, come in and donate his time for that. So, yeah, it was great.
It's a long way from Mississippi, isn't it?
A long way, yeah.
Connie Payton in the studio. We're talking about all the stuff that's done with the Walter and Connie Payton Foundation, things that you never thought you'd have to do, but you've kind of slipped into the shoes.
Yeah.
And there's no turning back, is there?
No turning back, but that's a good thing.
There's a run coming up that I will not participate in because I'm too old and my knees are shot. But if I was to run, I would be in this this one. It's coming up June 7th. This is it's part of the marathon. Is it a full marathon?
No, it's just a 8K and a 5K.
Can I walk it?
So you can walk it.
I can walk it.
You can walk it.
I might walk it.
And I'm not a runner either.
Oh. Would you walk next
all day
to me?
Long. I sure would.
All right.
We could do that together.
We could walk.
Hey.
Hey, look at them burning the asphalt. They're walking. This is coming up June 7th. It's the Kendall County Sweetness 5K, 8K Run. Oh, it says walk right there. If I'd read it, it says it right there.
Yeah.
When you do this, when you come up with these ideas, first of all, people can go there to sign up and get registered. There's a click at teamsweetness.com.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Walter's picture's right there, and you can't miss it. It's the big thing on the page, teamsweetness.com, and it'll take you right there. You say on here, my husband started his foundation and in the hope of providing for the in need and neglected children of Illinois who found themselves in part of the DCFS program.
Yes.
So many stories of him sneaking around and getting Christmas presents and stockpiling and then showing up as Santa Claus and stuff like that. When you look back at how this all began, I mean, he and Mike Hartenstein, my second favorite Bear player.
Oh, I know.
How's he doing? Tough, huh?
He's doing well.
Wasn't he owning a bar for a while?
I think so. Now, and Mike is, you're talking about a quiet person who doesn't say two words, but it was really good. We got to see him at the reunion
last fall. Yeah.
Yeah. And he looked great. I'm not sure what he's doing these days, but.
Yeah.
Yes.
Salt of the Earth players back in the day, and they came a long way back in 1975. When you look at how at the arc of all this, some of it must surprise you, and some of it's like, well, this is all just the way it's supposed to be, as difficult as that may be.
You know, I know Walter was always fond of kids because he truly would have been a teacher if he hadn't played football. And, you know, his major in college was special education. So he had a real fondness of kids and would have loved to have taught. And so and he always wanted to make a difference. And he knew he could do that, you know. And he knew that was part of, you know, his legacy in life. And so for me, it was a blessing because I truly wasn't involved when Walter was alive. I didn't get involved because I took care of the kids.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, for me, it was truly stepping stone to kind of get me out of my comfort zone, you know, to really, you know, get out there and make a difference and help others. But also, it truly, I think, helped me with my grieving process, too.
Mm.
Because it took help, you know, I took the focus off me and being sad and wanting to get out and help and make a difference in other people's lives. So it truly was a blessing for me.
Much like Kathleen, who spent years getting the Illinois legislature to do something about not having her husband's death go undone or unnoticed or without a greater cause. You know, I've watched all of you do your little things. And as I said to you off the air, it's like all of you have grown into a more fullness of who you are.
Yes.
Had it been different, you'd have been different. And I don't think you were supposed to be different. I know that sounds weird, but it's like it kind of just plays out as it does. And what you do with it or how you respond to this is far more important actually than what happened.
It's so true because, you know, you don't know. And when I look at my life now, it's so far different than what I would have anticipated it to be. I mean, I wouldn't have never, if I had to write my own story, I wouldn't have seen it in, you know, ending this way. But it's truly been a joy. I mean, it's been a blessing. I mean, it was hard at first. I mean, really, like I said, Walter was our Superman and none of us expected him to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where, you know, it would take his life. I mean, and then there's say, and as long as it's been, what, 15, 16 years?
16 years.
I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I'm glad, you know, to be where I am. And even with the kids, you know, Jared, too, has started his own foundation, mm-hmm. and he still helps with the Walter and Connie Payton Foundation, but he has his own foundation, and it makes all the difference in the world. And it is a wonderful way to keep Walter's legacy alive, too. And, you know, in this great city has been so gracious and kind to us. And I said, you know, from the very, you know, from earlier on too, when Walter passed, I said, how many people can say that they live in a city as large as this one, and I don't think there's not one door I couldn't go and knock on, and that person opened a door and they would recognize me and open a door and say, Connie, come on in, you know?
Yep.
And I really do feel that that's how I've been blessed, you know, and it's through just continuing Walter's legacy and doing what he loved. And, so, and the blessings, you know,
mm-hmm. they keep coming back.
They keep coming back.
It's like
yes.
today I'm downstairs waiting for you to come into the building. And I said to the security guy, I said, because I came down like 10:30 and just by the chance we may have missed each other, they may have sent you to the 10th floor. And I said, you know, do you have Connie Payton's name? And he goes, you mean the Connie Payton? I'm like, yeah. Like, in what regard?
Really?
Yeah. And he said, you make Walter Payton's wife? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, I just noticed she was here. She's not here yet. I'm like, is that a fact? Security guy.
Oh.
Yeah. So you're, you know.
Well, you know, doing double duty now, grandmothering. And
yes.
So I was a little
It's like
late.
Baby world at the Paytons.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So Jared just had a little girl.
Just had a little
Brittany's
girl.
Waiting.
Yes. In August.
Man.
Yes.
Grandma. So I want to thank you for doing what you do, because it's easy to not. It's easy for people when stuff happens to curl up, go off in the corner and die as well. They just don't get buried for years. And when every time I watch your kids doing something on television, I know part of that came from you. Every time I see Jared go out and do a talk at a school about bullying, I know that came from his dad. You know, I watch all these pieces. I watch Brittany on television doing that cooking show. I'm like, that probably came from both of them. But I watch them growing into themselves, too. And I'm sure, you know, it's like when you're up close, you don't
yes,
see it all the time. I know
exactly.
You do see it, though. But you stand back and watch, and you say, I say, every time that happens, it reaffirms that the world's just not a shitbox. That there are people doing things, they just happen to have the last name Payton, that are doing things that are there balancing out the stuff that's very difficult. And that's not always the case. So
it's not. And you know what? And I know Walter would be so proud of him that they both have found their niche.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're doing so well and giving back and really, and as Jared said, building their brand, you know, and they're proud of who their father was. And they're happy, you know, they're proud to carry the last name, but truly they really have made
it their own.
Yes.
No
they
doubt
have.
About it.
Yeah.
Well, you can find out more information on all this great stuff, organ donation awareness, the run is the stuff on the veterans at the Sweetness Team Sweetness.
Yes.
Too?
It's
all there.
Them.
Teamsweetness.com. So great
Payton34.com, I should say.
Excuse it?
Payton34.
Oh, what's Team Sweetness? Just the run.
Just for the run.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Payton34.
Yes.
So there you go. Stand corrected. Which usually happens. We're in the same place. You're always correcting me. Great to see you again. Shouldn't
it's
be 6 years next time.
Always good to see you. You're such
right.
a dear friend. Thank you
well,
so much.
Well, you're welcome so much. Life Matters continues right after this.
You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
Back at it to wrap this one up on Life Matters. My thanks again to my dear friend Connie Payton for spending quite a good chunk of time talking about her life with Walter and after how her life has been since he passed away at the age of 45 in 1999. And Kathleen Scott, who through her diligent efforts got Stan's Law passed. Her husband Stan Scott and I played semi-pro football together for a couple of years. He was a great guy and he passed away at a very young age to a tragic accident. And was unable to donate the organs which he wanted to because of a glitch in the system that she was able to fix with Stan's Law. So as I was telling Connie, it was kind of like opposite ends of the spectrum. Obviously, you know, on different levels of playing football as Stan Scott's and the Walter Paytons of the world, opposite ends of the same field, but definitely on the same field. Two men who lived larger than their presence on the field because of what they left after they were gone. So, and you know, they're the two wives afterwards. I mean, just it's there's so many parallels there to me. It was just really, really interesting. And yes, wish it was different, but it's not. And that's just the way it goes. And, you know, my stump on this, of course, every day is organ donor awareness today. You know, it's the silliest thing that humans have come up with. I find it just fascinating that we have all these spare parts. We'd rather take them with us for whatever reason. I don't know what the reasons are. I've tried over the years to figure out what it is that makes people hold on to things they cannot possibly use anymore. I don't know if it's just our ego, it's mine, this is mine. I'm taking it with me. You know, they say you can't take it with you when you're gone. Well, that's not true. You can. We've taken things with us that could definitely save somebody else's life. And I don't know what it is. I've done probably 50 shows on this. I've done PSAs on this. I've given talks on this. I've written about it. And I know there are people that are doing the right thing. They're signing the back of their driver's license. They're becoming organ donors and letting their family and friends know their wishes. But it's not enough because the need does not get any less. There are more than 123,000 men, women, and children currently in need of life-saving organ transplants. Matter of fact, every 10 minutes, another name is added to the National Organ Transplant waiting list. And sadly, an average of 21 people a day die because the organs they need are not donated in time because they're ended up in the ground somewhere. Beyond my comprehension, in 2014, more than 8,500 deceased donors made possible approximately 24,000 organ transplants. 8,500 deceased donors made possible about 24,000 organ donor transplants. In addition, there were nearly 6,000 transplants from living donors, like me. Nearly 48,000 sight-restoring corneal transplants performed in the USA in 2014. And each year, about 30,000 tissue donors save and heal lives. More than 1 million tissue transplants are done each year, and the surgical need for tissue is steadily on the increase. According to research, 98% of all adults have heard about organ donation, 86% have heard of tissue donation. 90% of Americans say they support donation, but only 30% of those know the essential steps to be a donor, what you got to do to get that done. Easy enough to go to get it checked out at all. You can go to the Walter and Connie Payton Foundation. They have information there. You can find it online. Just look up organ donor and see what you got to do. I always make a joke out of it saying if you're a piano player, you can still be an organ donor. The need is there. And as we talked about, and I tried to really beat into the ground today a little bit, nobody's immune from this. You know, it's like everything else in life. Because we're not in the obituary page today, we think we're going to live forever. Because we're not in the accident on the highway, we think we're never going to be one. Because we're not the person that said, oh my gosh, it's cancer, that it's not going to happen to us. We are not immune from any of this stuff. Everything comes in its time. So as I was riding down in the elevator with Connie, we both kind of just looked at each other and thought, interesting how things have all turned out in everybody's life. Because there's no guarantees you're going to be here tomorrow. They're just not. And we live like there is. And I guess that's the thing that chaffs my wheat the most. The things we should be taking care of, we don't. The people we should be reconnecting with, we don't. The stuff we should be forgiving and move on, we don't. And then when the woulda, coulda, shoulda dance comes, we got our undies in the bundle and shit hits the fan, we're usually standing right in front of it. And when it comes to organ donation and becoming an organ donor and leaving something of yourself behind, I'm reminded of the old Willie Nelson song, which is basically my motto for this stuff. A one, a two, a one, two, three. All of me. Why not take, hey, all of me? Can't you see that I'm no good without you? Take it all. What am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? Imagine being the person that is like a superhero that because you didn't get a chance to live to be the average age of 77.6, or even if you did, but you became an organ donor, the lives you would save on the way out and extend, you live on through them, and so on and so on and so on. I don't know what it's going to take for people to do it. It usually becomes to something that's in our backyard, and when it becomes our problem, as I said when I started this little rant, then it's a problem. But until then, it's somebody else's problem until the need is ours. Here's the bottom line. The life you save might not be your own. So what? Now what? Life matters. Adios.